What would you have done if you had been sitting there in front of the richest man in the world with about enough money in your pocket to pay your way back home, who had propositioned you to go to work for 20 years without compensation or without a subsidy? What would you have said? Well, what you have in mind right now is what I had in mind, too. I knew very well that I couldn't do it. Isn't it strange that when you put an unusual opportunity before a person, a new opportunity, the chances are 1,000 to 1 that his mind will jump to the no-can-do part of it immediately, to the negative side. You think of all of the reasons in the world why he can't do it. I can think of about 3 right off the bat. First of all, I didn't have enough money to carry me for 20 years. Second place, I didn't have enough education to deal with these successful men that I'd have to deal with all over the United States and in other countries. And in the third place, and this was about the most serious of all, I was not absolutely too sure about the meaning of that word philosophy that Mr. Carnegie had been kicking around for 3 days and nights. So you can imagine what a fantastic thing that it was. A young man with very little education sitting in front of this great man who had offered him an opportunity such as never has come to any other author at any time in the civilization of man. No author, as far as I've been able to tell, has ever had the cooperation and the collaboration of over 500 outstanding men to help create a literary work of any sort. That was the kind of an opportunity that was facing me. And here is an important thing I want to call to your attention. I didn't know this at the time, but I learned about it later. After briefing me for 3 days and nights on the potential of this philosophy, on how it could be organized, on what it would do, Mr. Carnegie made up his mind that when he put the question to me, he would allow me only 60 seconds in which to say yes or no. 60 seconds, that's all. I didn't see it, but he's sitting there with a stopwatch behind his desk, timing me. And it took me exactly 29 seconds to make up my mind that I would accept. I had 31 seconds between me and an opportunity such as never come to another author. I have never known of any author in any field having so much help, so much guidance, given and supplied without money and without price. I was ready to go back to Washington, and Mr. Carnegie then did another thing. And if you don't get anything out of your trip except what I'm now about to tell you, it might well change your entire destiny and through you the destiny of many other people. Mr. Carnegie said, "Well, Napoleon, 20 years is a long time, and I have given you a pretty tough assignment, and you have accepted it. I want to warn you now that you're going to have many temptations along the way, long before you complete your 20 years of research, to quit. Because that's the easiest thing that a weakling can do, is quit. I don't think you're a weakling. If I had thought so, I would not have given you the opportunity. But I do know that you need something to bridge over your temptations to quit if and when they do come. I'm now going to give you a formula that will enable you to condition your mind so thoroughly that nothing in the world can stop you from going ahead and completing the task to which I have assigned you." I was taking all this down in shorthand. He said, "I want you to write very slowly, and I want you to underscore every word that I speak now. And here's the message that I want you to repeat to yourself at least twice a day, once just before you go to bed at night and once just after you get up, looking at yourself in a mirror. You're talking to Napoleon Hill now, mind you. And here's what you say to him. Andrew Carnegie, I'm not only going to equal your achievements in life, but I'm going to challenge you at the post and pass you at the grandstand." And I threw my pencil down. I said, "Now, Mr. Carnegie, let's be realistic. You know very well I'm not going to be able to do that." At that time, Mr. Carnegie was rated as a billionaire, probably the first and maybe the only billionaire this country has ever created, as far as I know. He said, "Why, of course I know you're not going to be able to do that unless and until you believe it. But if you believe it, you will." But he said, "Let me ask you to do this. Try it out for 30 days. Will you do that?" Well, I said, "Yes, that's a reasonable request. I certainly will." But I had the fingers on both hands crossed. I knew doggone well it wouldn't work. The idea of a youngster in his early 20s promising to equal and outdo the achievements of a man who had reached the stage of a billionaire. Why, it was so ridiculous, it wasn't even funny. It even scared me. I thought Mr. Carnegie lost his mind. I came very near walking out on him. It was just something that was too good to be true. But I promised. And when I got back to Washington, my brother and I had an apartment. When I went to go over this formula, I didn't want my brother to know what a big fool I'd made of myself. Because I had some news to break to him that were not going to be good anyway. I had agreed to pay the expenses of the two of us through school, and I was going to have to tell him that I was dropping out and he'd have to earn his own way. I went into the bathroom and I closed the door real tight, and I got real close up to the glass and almost whispered this formula. And as I turned around, in my mind's eye, I saw the real Napoleon Hill standing there, and I says, "You darn liar, you know very well you're not going to be able to do that. Only darn is not the word I used." It was a much more definite and stronger word. And I felt like a fool, like a thief, going through a thing like that, a farce. And that's just what it seemed like. But I said, "Well, after all, you promised, Mr. Carnegie. Go ahead and try it." Well, for the first week, or just about the first week, I had an attitude of feeling like I was doing something foolish. And then all of a sudden, about the beginning of the second week, something inside of me said, "Why don't you change your mental attitude about this? Do you realize that Andrew Carnegie is the richest man in the world, that he is known all over the world as the best picker of men in the world, and if he chose you to do a job like this, he must have found something in you that you didn't know was there. Why don't you change your mental attitude?"